I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. The latest global climate summit in Bonn is over. The U.S. did not blow the process up or bog it down significantly, as many had feared. So the Paris Agreement to tackle the climate crisis is still alive and kicking. And you can almost hear the collective exhale around the world this week. Still, if we're going to avoid the worst effects of climate change, the challenges ahead are immense. So today, our Livable Planet desk brings us two stories about how two very different players are approaching the problem. We're going to start with the world's Carolyn Beeler right here in Boston.
I spend a lot of time at work thinking about climate change as this big, complex international policy issue. What I get to think about less is what cutting our carbon footprint actually looks like. Will all of our energy have to come from wind and solar? Or will all of our cars have to be electric? Will capturing and storing carbon ever really work? So when I heard a while back about this spreadsheet that a Harvard professor uses to help his students model a low-carbon future, I was pretty excited. Not because I'm really into spreadsheets, because I'm really not, but because it seemed so concrete.
How are you going to supply jet fuel in a low-carbon world?
This is that Harvard environmental science professor, Dan Schrag.
What are you going to do about passenger vehicles? What are you going to do about home heating and air conditioning?
I'm going to just take you really briefly through an overview.
I got to sit in on Schrag's environmental science class at Harvard this fall while he introduced the exercise.
The idea is to take this grand problem and break it up into the different sectors in which we actually use energy.
Schrag points to tabs at the bottom of an Excel spreadsheet that he's projected up at the front of the classroom.
So, residential and commercial, transportation, industrial.
Within those categories, Schrag's students have to fill in key numbers about America's energy future. How much comes from coal, oil, natural gas, biomass, renewables, even hydrogen. What energy efficiency rates are for cars and homes.
So it's very easy to fill out the spreadsheet. What's hard to do is do it in an intelligent way.
It's hard because the goal is to cut carbon emissions 83% by 2050. That was the Obama administration's official goal.
I don't want to say it's impossible to get to that level of reduction by 2050, but certainly it's like really hard.
This is Beverly Guh, who's a student in Schrag's class. She, Yuki Zwitowski, and Nick Durham are talking about how much they can rely on energy efficiency for these cuts.
Such a short time period to be able to increase your efficiency by so much.
2050 seems far away, but 33
really
years
not.
Does not.
These students already know part of the solution is to electrify everything they can.
So much easier if it's all one grid. Yeah. And you can use whatever renewable energy to power that grid.
But to generate that much electricity, the students have to put the solar and wind industries on steroids. Here's Zwitowski again.
We only have 1 gigawatt per year of solar. And we're trying to ramp it up to like 800 to 1,000, which is insane. But if you don't do that, then you're releasing too much carbon.
This 1,000-fold increase in solar didn't seem terribly realistic to them or to their professor.
Last year, we built 15 gigawatts of wind and solar in the U.S., which was a record.
Schrag says the kind of increase these students are talking about would take a long time.
At current construction rates, that's 500 years. Now, you can accelerate that. We can build more factories, but realize that solving the climate challenge is the biggest construction project the world's ever seen.
Of course, wind and solar are not the only possible answers.
Some students have pushed very heavily on advanced nuclear power. Some students have done enormous amounts with carbon capture and storage. There is no prescriptive recipe for doing well on this exercise.
In other words, there's no one right answer to Schrag's class project. So I ask him for the right answer in the real world.
So I think, unfortunately, I'm going to disappoint you.
Schrag says he can't be my energy oracle because there are too many open questions about the kinds of new technologies we need to get us off of carbon.
Is there going to be a next generation nuclear technology that's going to be much safer and less expensive? We don't know. Will battery prices go down enough so that storage of electricity from wind and solar becomes much more manageable? We don't know. And until you answer those sorts of questions, you really can't say what the right answer is.
You're right. That wasn't quite as satisfying as I was hoping for.
Schrag's real students are still working on their spreadsheets. For now, neither Beverly Guh nor Yuki Zwitowski thinks the goal of cutting carbon 83% by 2050 is going to happen.
I tend to think that we won't quite make it.
Beverly and I were actually talking earlier this week that we need to have like environmental science intervention club for us to let out our emotions about how hopeless this all feels.
Shrag warned them about that feeling when he first introduced this exercise in class.
There's a point of this course where all the students get kind of depressed, like, oh my God, this is so much harder than I thought. It's not about pessimism. It's about realism. Being optimistic through delusion is not helpful. Being optimistic really involves a value of whether we can climb the mountain we need to climb. What we're trying to do is first describe what the mountain is and then think about what we have to do to get over it. Okay? All right. See you on Wednesday.
These students have 2 weeks to finish their spreadsheets and chart a path over that mountain. When they leave Harvard, some of them plan to tackle this problem out in the real world. So who knows? Maybe some of their ideas will leap off this spreadsheet and turn into real policy solutions. For The World, Carolyn Beeler, Boston.